Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hello and welcome to All About Android. This is episode 88, recorded on Tuesday, December 4th, 2012. We are your weekly source for the latest news, apps, and hardware for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good to see you again.
It's good to be back. It's good to be here.
Over here, we have another Jason, not to be confused. Well, with another Jason. Jason Applebaum.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
We got dueling Jason.
It's going good. It's going good.
I know. I always have to kind of ask myself, like, do I call you Jason or do I call you the Bomb or Applebaum or J-App or... I don't actually ever... Let me rephrase that. I never have to ask myself that question.
Like, when I wake up in the morning, I go, do I really want to be called Jason or do I want to go with something else? I'm just going to go with the artist formerly known as Jason.
I don't know. I think you might have to pick up J-App. I think that has a nice ring to it.
J-App.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on yet another episode. It's good to have you back, man.
Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to be discussing a lot of interesting things this week. A little rumorish stuff with the Asus Cube. Not very rumorish at all because I have it in my hands. The Droid DNA. Just a whole lot of stuff. Ingress, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about Ingress. We haven't spent a whole lot of time in the past other than mentioning that it was kind of on the forefront and happening at the very early stages. So we'll kind of go into detail on that, plus a whole lot more.
Should be interesting.
Absolutely. Let's dive into the news.
So one of our favorite topics to talk about are the numbers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You wonder why? Because every month we have that to talk about.
Exactly. So. Yeah. It's a repetitious. But everyone wants to know about penetration, and especially now with the latest version of Jelly Bean being rolled out over the air. Interesting to see what kind of footprint it has. And recently, over on the developers.android.com website, they revealed some numbers from a 30-day period confirming that there was a boost in Jelly Bean users up to 6.7% of Android devices.
Woo!
Yeah, so it's up. It's not up. It's not double digits yet, but it's close enough. It's Android 4.1 is running now on 5.9% of the devices, and 4.2 is on 0.8%. And I imagine that's just going to increase as the rollout continues. Ice Cream Sandwich sees a smaller increase of just 1.8% to get a total of 27.5% of all the devices sampled. Now, it's important to note that these numbers are coming from Google themselves. They're coming from the Android organization, and they were done from a sample of devices that visited the Google Play Store in a 30-day period.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone didn't go to the Google Play Store in the last month, they didn't get counted. You know, there's always room for shooting holes in it, but I think it gives a pretty good – it was pretty good sampling of what the audience – of what the user base looked like. It
means that somebody on Cupcake went to the Google Play Store to download something.
Exactly.
At least 0.1% of people did that.
Or checked for updates.
Yeah, it kind of blows
it just interacted with the Play Store server.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. But still commanding a huge lead, a huge footprint is Gingerbread, with over 50% of the devices are still running Gingerbread, which actually made me think, because we were talking yesterday over email about an app that we're going to talk about next week and a specific bit of functionality, but it's Jelly Bean specific. And I was like, oh, wow, this is it's something that has to do that with Jelly Bean. Mm-hmm. What it's doing, something that's also in the Jelly Bean operating system that we're used to. I'm trying to be vague.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that people who don't have Jelly Bean yet is still a huge population.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it next week.
You know, it's not even 7%. Although I can't help but feel that Jelly Bean is kind of ramping up a little bit faster than Ice Cream Sandwich.
I just checked that the numbers back in history, thanks to, you know, the interwebs. The delta is greater. So the rate of change is substantially greater than the ICS rollout. And I think that's to do in part with the fact that the Play Store is rolling out more sales numbers, with like the Nexus 7 and the Nexus 4 and the Nexus 10 being for sale directly through. And they're actually devices that are you know, leading their class.
Well, but do you also think that the increase in number of devices has something to do with it as well, too? I mean, you've got more, you know, as we went from phones and now here we are, we've got the Nexus 7, the Nexus 10 just rolled out. You're shaking your head.
I think it's to do with, I'm not sure. I think you could be right, but I think mostly it's to do with the fact that they're just shipping more devices. And shipping more devices is the key, because if you ship more Nexus devices, then the Delta will change more quickly.
Right, but they last year the tablet didn't, you know, Nexus 7 didn't exist. So you potentially have people who don't have phones, already have phones, adding into the mix now, and introducing more devices into the wild with that running that operating system.
Yeah, but for people that buy Nexus 7s, they also have Gingerbread phones.
True. Right.
So you're sort of, they're going at the same rate almost, unless the people who own Nexus 7 own Nexus 4, and it's just a big, you know, what if. But I think the real sort of interesting point is the fact that, you know, with the Galaxy S3 rolling out Jelly Bean very quickly and Motorola rolling out Jelly Bean very quickly, I think Jelly Bean will be sort of the new Gingerbread.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that makes sense. And also, I'm just kind of trying to figure out how I phrase this, but Gingerbread, when was Gingerbread? Was that now 2 years ago?
Jeez.
I mean, well, you know, last year, you're saying 3 years ago?
I'm saying three, and the reason I'm saying that is because I got the original Droid, which was one of the first of Gingerbread. Whoa, hello.
Oh, of course, personal chat.
There we go. And I'm a year into my Galaxy Nexus contract, and I had that one for 2 years, and I got it pretty soon in December.
Okay, here's the breakdown. So Gingerbread rolled out, the first version of Gingerbread rolled out on December 6, 2010. So it's been almost exactly 2 years.
Okay.
Since Gingerbread.
So 2 years. So I guess what I'm thinking is, when you think about the fact, at least in the United States, I realize the U.S. is a little bit different than worldwide. Yep. But, I mean, there's a lot of people that are buying Android devices in the U.S. And, you know, a lot of them are kind of addicted to the two-year subsidy thing, waiting for their next update to happen. If they bought with those Gingerbread devices, or they have a device that was Gingerbread two years ago, that's going to drop off. They're going to upgrade, and suddenly you're going to see a big shift in the Gingerbread numbers to something that's Gingerbread.
This brand new Nexus 4 phone that is Google, right. you know, Google approved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I think Jason sort of hit the nail on the head. I think that's going to be a huge factor, because these two-year contracts are going to start to come up. People are going to start to realize there are new phones on the market, and the new phones have Jelly Bean.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah, then hopefully we say goodbye to Gingerbread, because, I mean, right now I don't think that number is really
Gingerbread. You just hate it.
Well, why do we hate Gingerbread?
It's old days.
The holidays. Everyone likes a little Gingerbread.
That's true. I got to get into this.
Amazing when it first came out, just to be.
Yeah. It was a big deal.
I will admit that with this update, I feel as if this Jelly Bean update to the 4.2 is a little bigger than at first I thought it was going to be. This phone feels significantly different than the phone has felt a year ago. Like, just the advancements they've made in the OS, and just the little things. Even with, like, I'll be surprised. I was a critic of the widget on the lock screen, but now I'm totally on board.
Yeah. You
know? And like, just the little touches that have come with 4.2, I had a moment of zen in realizing, like, wow, Android's come a long way. I'm really, you know, I'm kind of appreciative of it.
So my favorite part of 4.2 has got to be the UX, the new UX concepts of, like, small things like bolding, the significant digit. I love things like that. Just little things, little touches that are just putting it over the edge. It's sort of, you know, polishing what is a good thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then even on the app side, I mean, as I was reviewing apps yesterday and today, trying to find my one for the arena, I came across several apps where I'm like, wow, these look great. These look really, you know, like, it's starting to feel like, for, we always talk, you know, we always compare it to iOS and things like that, but I'm starting to feel kind of the playing field is getting leveled, and the mm-hmm. developers are catching up, and I'm, you know, Android pride, you know.
So, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the developers are a big part of that. They're they're being more, you know, incentivized to kind of develop to that new level, particularly like you were just saying a little bit ago, Jason, with all of the new, like, A, there's new Nexus devices, but B, they appear to be in high demand. Yep. So developers have even more reason now than ever to kind of update to the current standards. So that's good overall. I thought this was kind of cool. Google Apps customers are actually now able to distribute apps via the newly announced Google Play private channel. So employees with an organization who log in with their Google Apps account credentials
should basically see apps appear in their Play Store app that, you know, the company would have loaded it as being kind of like an internal app into their own developer console for distribution to their employees.
It's almost like when I go into Google Play on my phone, which is on T-Mobile, I get kind of like a T-Mobile picks. It's almost like company picks. Yeah, that's really
exactly
cool.
What it is.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Good, just I think just in general a good, you know, a good move for Android. Android's always kind of trying to solidify itself in the enterprise and be seen more as an enterprise, you know, safe device and something that enterprises can use and trust. And this is just another way for, I guess, the enterprise to kind of tap into
that. What's the use case of that? Well, I guess enterprise,
like, you know, maybe you have a particular spreadsheet app or something
sanctioned,
specific,
approved,
that's specific to your company. Yeah. And now you have a way of distributing it to your employees as opposed to just attaching an APK to an email and sending it out. And there's no upgrade or update kind of path or something down those lines. So.
Fascinating.
It's
really helpful, especially when you roll out new devices to a large corporation, because there are entire companies based around this entire situation. Like Mobile Iron, I believe, is a company who does something very similar to this, but it's not as deeply integrated as this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, can't get much better than being integrated into the Play Store.
Yeah, it's true.
It's more about that polish.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you guys were like me, and you probably were today, this little bit of news came across the wire and you immediately kind of jumped for your mouse to go do something, but you realized that there wasn't anything you could do. As today, Google announced the dates for Google I.O. 2013. It's going to be back at the Moscone Center West in San Francisco on May 15th through the 17th. Some people noted that it's earlier than it was last year, but Google I.O. used to be in May. So I think I wasn't too surprised that it was back to the May date. So the most important thing is that you can't register yet. Registration details are going to be announced in February. But now if you need to put in, you know, developers that need to put in the request to work to get the trip approved or whatnot, probably do so now and get the dates lined up. Because if last year was any indication, this is not a show not to be missed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let the speculation begin, but, you know.
The May date makes total sense, too, because I.O. has always been in May, and I think the only reason that it wasn't in May this year is because they made it 3 days.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, and also just scheduling at the Moscone is just insane. Yeah. The number of shows that come, I mean, I know a lot of people.
And that's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think the June date last year was more of an anomaly than this May date. But
which makes more sense.
Yeah. And they're still keeping it at 3 days. It's just now they're 15, a year 15 out.
15 to 17th.
So now they can fit it in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so now, you know, now it's the waiting till February to find out when can we start registering and how quickly it will fill up. And, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
The answer is later and instantly.
Yeah, later and really, really, really quick.
Really not much mystery to this story, though. I'm sorry.
Not really. Problem solved. Moving on.
All right. Well, then let's take an email. Let's turn to the fans of the show that have written in to AAA@twit.tv. And Mark wrote in to say, "Hey, folks, for nearly 2 years, I've tolerated a lousy LG Ally because none of Verizon's phones tickled my fancy. That changed with the release of the Note 2. And despite being the pickiest nerd who ever lived, the Note 2 has exceeded every last one of my expectations. It is an incredible device. But today, I noticed a single broken pixel. It is tiny. It is almost microscopic, but I cannot stop looking at it. I find myself forgetting what I'm doing because I fixate on that one teeny tiny black dot. So I write to ask, should I suck it up, learn to deal with it, or is this grounds enough to return it to the Verizon store and get another? I think I would feel weird pointing at that one nanoscale blemish and demanding a brand new device because of it, but I find it impossible to ignore what has been seen cannot be unseen." Mr. Applebaum, you were raising your hand.
Yeah, I was pointing. Bring a magnifying glass and take that sucker back.
Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed. 100% agreed.
Because actually, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it could be, at least this could be your reasoning, it could be a sign of further weakness. This could be the beginning of something more. And if you don't do it early, it becomes potentially more difficult to do later.
Yeah.
For that matter, you could say the demons escape through that single pixel. They'll still take it back.
I suppose so. It's not a perfect device.
Yeah.
And you bought a perfect device. So you should get a perfect device.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think if that sort of thing, especially if you're already noticing it,
yes.
Living with it probably will be way worth
it. It's going to get way worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from experience. I bought a monitor a couple of years ago, a Samsung monitor, really nice monitor. After, I don't know, about a month and a half, I noticed like almost dead center in the screen, there was a dead pixel. And I didn't do anything about it because, you know, I'd thrown away the box. I could have found out where I bought it from. I bought it online somewhere. But I didn't do anything about it. To this day, I still notice that damn dead pixel.
Oh, man.
It doesn't go away, man. If your eye sees it, it's hard to unsee it.
Yeah, it's brutal.
So do something about it.
Yeah. Especially at Verizon. As someone who was a Verizon customer from the late 90s until I moved to T-Mobile for Android, and like what was that was 08 or so.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Verizon and you just dig your heels in and you just be stubborn and not leave, they eventually will give you whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would just say the words like AT&T Verizon, or not Verizon, Sprint. Like, I'm gonna go to Sprint, they don't have dead pixels.
Yep, exactly.
Chances are they're not gonna care that much. Like, they're not gonna push back that much.
It's probably under warranty or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly under a manufacturer's warranty, and that's an imperfection that out of the box it's there. They should do something about it.
Yeah.
So.
No, you just start saying, you start threatening to go to Sprint or AT&T. You start saying you're going to tell all your friends. You're gonna, you know what I mean? Like, the moment you start saying you'll get vocal about it, that's when they're like, here.
Yeah.
You know, so just play that to your advantage. You're the customer. It's always right.
But no violence.
No violence. Yeah, keep it safe.
Local. No violence. Wow, we had to go there?
Well, do you think that's the most effective?
No, definitely don't. No violence. Pixel. They're not holding your children hostage.
Exactly. It's a pixel, for Christ's sake.
Let's keep things in perspective here, all right? You know, it's just a pixel. Step back. Anyway.
All right. With that, well, we're already kind of talking about hardware. Let's jump into hardware.
So it's funny that we were talking about Google I.O. with the new announcement of the Google I.O. date for 2013. If you remember back to Google I.O. 2012, there was the curious case of the Nexus Q, which was bizarro shot put-like device that was meant to be inserted into home entertainment setups and living rooms around the world to help you, you know, stream media from the Google Play Store and share and all stuff like that. And Google never actually released it. And so those of us who went to Google I.O. who have one, I was looking at mine the other day and I was like, I don't really know what to do with this now. It's like, I never use it. Yeah,
but I use mine very, very rarely.
I think I'm going to put mine back in the box and hope it becomes super rare in like 5 years, and then I can like give it to like the computer museum or something like that and be like, oh, you know. Anyway, but so it's curious, and the reason why this comes back up is because Asus announced they're launching a product in January called the Asus Cube, and that's spelled Q-U-B-E. And there's a lot of speculation that it's basically just a Nexus Q. It's like an upgraded version of the Nexus Q that also features a Google TV dongle. The Google TV dongle has been rumored to be launching in January as well. There's been FCC filings that describe the Google TV dongle as basically containing the Google TV OS into the dongle, able to plug into devices like the Cube. And the Cube would have Wi-Fi and RF support, and the Google dongle, which would only work with the Cube.
Wait, did you say the Cube, you could plug in the Google TV dongle into the Cube?
Yep. Via USB. Like. Yep.
Why? What is the Cube, a television?
No, the Cube is a device. It's kind of like the Q.
So why would you plug a Google TV dongle into a device? Why would you plug the two devices together?
So you can have the Google TV OS via the device, because the Q had no OS as far as you could tell.
Oh, I see what you mean. Right. I don't understand that logic, but okay. Because I would think that they're two discrete things. Like I would say the Google TV dongle, China's been making those for a long time. It's great to see somebody get behind it and do it correctly. And then you have this Asus Cube device, which I don't see them
merging.
I don't understand.
That's well, and that's why this story is so perplexing. Is because
it's like plugging keyboards together. I just don't get it.
So to understand the Nexus Q, and what I can only assume the Nexus Cube is, or the whatever this Asus Cube is it's just a wireless receiving device. It's a like the Nexus Q itself allowed you to stream movies and stream music to your stereo or to your TV from the Q. That's all it did.
Sure, but it was a set-top box.
No, I wouldn't say it was a set-top box.
I mean, it is because you plug it. It's got HDMI out and audio out. And
but it had no, it had no UI. It had no operating system. I mean, it had an operating system, but it had no, you know, like user focused UI.
Yeah,
had,
sure, you know. But it was running Android.
True. Right. It was running some weird version of it. You know,
it sat in some fuzzy realm. It was a set-top box. It's just not a set-top box like a Roku.
It was a set-top box that combined a stereo in a box because it had all those speaker outputs and all that.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. Like, how could you take a Google TV stick, which presumably gives you HDMI out, and then plug it into this other device that is HDMI out as well? Like, I don't quite connect.
I know the answer to this. Magic.
Yep.
Magic. That's the only way.
Yep. I'm just, I can understand if it was like a module or something, but I think the Google TV stick is literally just a Google TV set-top box that is an HDMI stick.
I just
like broken stick.
Yeah, I guess what I don't understand is if this is, you know, mind you, it's very, you know, this is all speculation based on, you know, some random little bits of information that have floated out there. But if this is the successor to the Q, why not just build Google TV into the damn thing?
Put the darn chip inside of it.
Successor to the Q?
Yeah. It's like the upgraded version of the Q. Yeah.
Okay. I have no idea.
Yeah. And especially if it ships with the dongle. Like, why not just have it be integrated? I could understand if, like, you could buy the Cube and it will do everything the Cube was going to do.
Oh, the Cube! But do we know that this is coming out from Google, or is this an Asus product?
This is an Asus product.
Then it's not the successor to the Cube.
Well, it's there.
That's what. Yeah, right.
I mean, that's how it's being positioned.
There's enough confusion within this story and unanswered questions to know that we probably can't bank on most of this. But it's interesting to talk about.
CES is going to be interesting. That's for sure.
Yeah, just when you talk about like a Google TV dongle and then you talk about like another like the Asus Cube, I mean, that's literally like two plugging two keyboards together. It just doesn't – like I don't get the end goal.
I understand. I get it. I mean, like I said, the Q lacked that UI and it lacked that interface. And if the Google TV dongle allows that, then you can, you know, have a way to use Google TV.
I get the end goal. I just don't get how we get to that end goal.
Right. And so, and I think the better question is why not just have it be integrated? Why is the dongle involved at all? But that's, you know, who knows? Time will tell. January. We got a month.
Time won't tell. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe this is vapor. Well, I'll tell you what isn't vapor. This device right here that I have in my hands. I'll go ahead and unplug it right
sure
now.
It sure isn't vapor.
No, it's not vapor at all. This is the HTC Droid DNA. It is a pretty nice phone. It's on Verizon. I've had the pleasure of playing around with this. That's a teaser. Playing around with this for the past, I don't know, four days or so. I should be reviewing this on Before You Buy next week. So this is kind of a preview of my time with it. But my early take on this, really the kind of big deal with the Droid DNA and what they're touting as kind of the big deal is its 1080p display. And I went on Google Plus and a couple of times with some of kind of my thoughts on this as I've been playing around with it. 1080p on a 5-inch display, it's absolutely nothing that's necessary. It's not necessary in the least, and it doesn't change your experience necessarily. It doesn't change anything with how you use your device, but it's really, really slick. Well, it looks really good.
That's a spec that I totally dismissed. I was like 1080p, whatever. But then what you showed me before we went on.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's impossible to show on this show. But what I've been showing people to kind of show it off is I'll pull up Plume and just ask people to look at the tiny, as you can see, if you're watching the video version, the tiny little avatars. And it's the kind of thing that me telling you isn't going to do it justice. When you look at it, the amount of detail that you see in those tiny little pictures.
Not even just detail, crispness. And
it's like you're looking into a tiny little window. It's weird to explain, and it sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
And so don't take a 16:9
phone?
Yeah.
It's a 1920 by 1080. The 440 points per inch, and that's compared. So if you compare it against kind of the big boys right now, Google Nexus 4, 320 points per inch, or pixels per inch, sorry. The One X is 316, the 8X is 341, and then the iPhone 5 is 326. So it blows all the other ones out of the water.
And so what I'm saying is that don't just take Jason's word for it. He showed me, Chad, you looked at it, right? I mean, this isn't like, it's noticeable.
It's funny because, and this is not Android related, but the very first thing I thought of was, do you remember the goggles that were the Kickstarter program? Do you remember those goggles? They were chat room will hopefully help me out. One of the big limitations was the screen that you could put in there wasn't that great. And so it was like a really low resolution Oculus Rift. And it was a Kickstarter campaign. And the first thing I was like, please put this phone in the Oculus Rift or at least the display because that would be awesome. Yeah. And because you're using magnification to really blow up that display.
Yeah. Yeah.
And looking at that display is just gorgeous.
How does it look?
Is it? I mean, I haven't seen the phone in person. I'm just looking at the Skype feed. But is it a long, tall phone? Like,
yeah,
is 16, that what?
Yeah,
I'm,
I mean, it's 16.9.
Yeah, it's 16.
That's why I asked. Because I don't know if there's. Is there another phone that's 16.9? Because that would just be like a really thin, long device, and that would be awesome.
Yeah. So this is comparing it to the Google Nexus. You can see it's
Google Nexus is 16.9 as well.
It's a little longer.
Is it 16.9? Okay, never mind. I don't know what I'm talking about then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a bigger screen, so that's why it's a bigger phone. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a great device, and it's in the $200 category on Verizon. Now, everybody immediately, you know, anytime I post about this, I get a million comments about the Note 2 that's also on Verizon now. That's actually $100 more comparing the two. So just to kind of give you a quick kind of comparison. I wish I had the Note 2 to kind of show them off side by side. But, you know, both have the quad core, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of internal storage, 8 megapixel camera. The camera, by the way, is actually a very strong feature of this phone. I've loved it. And the low light performance is great. Both ship with Jelly Bean. The Note 2 has a 5.5-inch screen at 720p. This is a 5-inch screen at 1080p. So it's a little bit smaller screen with higher resolution, so things just pop a little bit more. Now, here's all the strong points of the Note 2. The Note 2 has a removable 3,100 milliamp hour battery versus a non-removable 2020 milliamp hour battery in the Droid DNA. And my results with the battery have kind of been mixed. Most days I've gone through and had, you know, 20 to 30% at the end of the day with, for me, moderate to, you know, moderate use basically throughout the weekend. Today it's actually suffered a lot since I've been here at Twit, and I don't know if it's because of all the wireless access here or what it is, but it's really kind of dropped and it's almost dead. So that's kind of a no good situation there. Note 2 has a SD card slot. DNA does not. Note 2 has, of course, the S Pen. DNA doesn't have that. So if that's a sticking point for you, that would be it. So I guess, you know, between $200 for the Droid DNA versus $300 for the Note 2, I think it just really depends on how much money you have. The Note 2 is probably going to beat it on a lot of those extra features. But for $200, I mean, this is a great device, and I totally recommend it.
Is it running Jelly Bean?
It is running Jelly Bean, yes. It's running 4.1.1 right now. It has a key wireless wireless charging built into it, NFC. It's a great device.
How much storage space is there on there? I'm sorry.
16 gigs.
16 gig. Can I put some video on there? Can we see how it looks?
Sure.
It might take a couple minutes, though. Yeah. That's a big file.
We can get back to it.
Yeah, we'll get back to it. Yeah. I'm fascinated by this idea now.
All right.
How crisp it is. So.
Well, we will let Ron churn on that, and I will go ahead and read the next email, although it's kind of directed to you, so you can answer it. David from Las Vegas writes in and says, first, I want to say thanks for the podcast. Great job, guys. Thank you. This question is for Ron, since he's the Google TV expert. You're an expert in Google TV. I was looking to get a Google TV soon, but don't know which to buy, Vizio CoStar, Logitech Review, or the new Sony one. Which one would you recommend? Price is not a huge concern, although I do like the price of the Vizio, but the reviews are not great, mainly because of software, I believe. I have seen some review on eBay for $99. You should be able to find the review for less expensive than that nowadays. What do you think? Thanks.
It's copying over. Cool. My thought is, depending on what your budget is and what your level of interest is, although now with the Sony box, the little mini Sony Google TV box, as well as the Vizio CoStar, price almost isn't an issue because the price has come down so much. It's very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
I would not get the Logitech Review just because it's a dead device.
Yeah, it's been
a year since they killed it. Remember, they killed it last December. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it's not getting the software updates as quickly as you'd want, or maybe even at all. So I would take the review out. And then it's between the Sony Sony box or the Vizio CoStar. And I got to be honest, and this might just be like because it's different and the grass is greener, I happen to have a Sony branded Google TV. I have the integrated Blu-ray player. But I would go with the Vizio CoStar because I kind of like that UI a slightly better. Mm-hmm. Sony's remote is a little more kind of innovative. That's the flip remote, yeah. You know, and mm-hmm. that sort of, and it's got a lot of advanced stuff. It's got the microphone in it and stuff like that. But I don't really feel as if the power of that remote has been unlocked with apps yet, because still the Google TV apps are dragging. You know, mm-hmm. like we haven't. I was just browsing through the other day and I haven't found any. There's still no Google TV killer app as yeah. far as I'm concerned, other than what comes with it. So I would go for the Vizio one. I think it looks a little better. So
yeah.
The UI is a little easier to use, a little more consumer friendly. I was very impressed by what Vizio did with that box.
Yeah. I know we had Aaron Newcomb was on the show, I don't know, probably like 10 or 12 episodes ago. And he did a in studio kind of review of the CoStar and yeah. gave it a pretty good review. I think there was some slowdown on games and things like that.
But the thing is that with these boxes, they are pared down processors. You know what I mean? Like, they're not as robust as you would want them to run the harder games. And mm-hmm. honestly, I'm still not convinced that the Google TV is a gaming platform. I have a couple of games. I played Cannibalt and Plane Frenzies on Google TV now as well, too, and which I thought was interesting. I've been playing that game on my phone a lot. But as far as the differences between the two, yeah, I remember he had some complaints and nitpicks about it. Mm-hmm. But to me, it comes down to what you want to do with it. If you want to do it to enhance your TV watching experience and get access to HBO Go and Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that,
yeah.
then, I mean, I think the Vizio one, the interface, being a Sony user, the interface is a little more advanced. Sony really hasn't done a major update to the UI yet, to the skin on it. They've kind of been dependent on Google, the Google TV team, mm-hmm. Where Vizio kind of took it in their own hands and you know, really modded it the way you know you can with an Android device.
Right.
So, yeah, I give a little bit of an edge to Vizio. So,
I'm hoping that this next I/O Google focuses on Google TV a little
bit. I hope they not the Q or the Cube or whatever it is. But I the thing is, again, I mean, I feel so bad because I'm such a TV fan. And I really wanted to embrace the Apple TV all those years ago, and it always got put aside to the hobbyist device. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Google TV is getting the same kind of banishment or label that it's a hobby device, mm-hmm. and it's not going to be as much of a priority as the Nexus tablets or the phones. Or it shouldn't be, because I don't really think there's enough of a market there. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I just love to tinker with and I love to play with it. And I can't imagine life without my Google TV now. It's like yeah. it's so you know,
and you can't help but feel like. At some point, Google, well, at any point, they would love this, but it kind of seems like with Apple, the Apple TV was always kind of like, oh, well, it was, yeah, like he said, yeah. it was a hobby. Like yeah. Steve Jobs said, it was a hobby. You get that same kind of feeling with Google TV, with Google, in the hopes that it's going to come out of that hobby stage and into like, look, we've got it going right now. We've got it right.
Well, the problem with it is that I get the sense, like, at least with the Apple TV, Steve Jobs acknowledged that it and Apple management acknowledged that, yeah, here's this device we did, and it's kind of more for hobbyists than it's, you know, whatever. With Google, I get the sense that they've got so many things going on, and some guy in Google's like, I'm going to go take Android and mod it for the TV, and we're going to make the Google TV. And someone made deals with Sony and LG and all this stuff like that. But really, Sergey and the rest of them, like the upper management, don't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have Eric Schmidt saying that, you know, Google TV is going to be on 50% of TVs by June, by this past June, and that came and went. And we saw a big increase, but that was very aggressive. But like, where was that coming from?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, where was that coming from?
There was no other indication that was a priority in senior management at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't see it as being a big priority for them, and that's why I've been hoping that someone, whether it's a Sony or a Vizio or an independent developer, really embraced it and took this platform and created this awesome thing, and then like, okay, there's the value for it.
Mm-hmm.
If they shut down Google TV right now, I'll say the biggest death knell for it was that they couldn't get Hulu on it. That, you know what I mean, like things like that, like the content issues were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were slow to the gate with Google Play Store, being able to watch movies and things like that.
Yeah.
Why Amazon hasn't fully embraced it, and like the fact that you got it, like I watched a movie this weekend on Amazon Prime Instant Video. It's just through the browser and it's Amazon's web player. Why they're not developing an Android app to really make a rich Amazon experience is beyond me.
They have an Android app.
I'm sure they have an Android app. Yeah, but it doesn't. No,
we know they have an Android app because they're Kindle.
Kindle,
the
right.
Kindle is an Android device. It right. has an Android app.
Right. Yeah. But
and it's may not be optimized for Google TV, but they haven't even released that for the Nexus 7 or the Nexus 10, and I don't think they're going to. I don't think it's in their plan.
Which is weird because it's consumption of their product, which is kind of their goal, right?
I don't know. I think, I mean, if, well, let the public shaming commence. Like, they've had the app. They could have rolled it out at any point yeah. to Play Store. They haven't, and I don't. Or they could have put it in their store. I mean, they could have put it yeah. in their store, and the catch was you have to download the Amazon store in order to get
that. That's actually really smart, yeah. It's because people would definitely keep the Amazon App Store installed if that were kind of the hook.
Exactly. Yeah, and everybody and their brother is Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
I know everybody's brother totally has Amazon Prime.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that Amazon's making a big mistake by not utilizing yeah. the 400 million existing Android devices on this planet.
I totally agree. Did you get your movie up?
Wow. That looks really good.
What I said was just that profound, apparently.
Yeah, and of course, this is the kind of thing that it doesn't translate at all for
and
video.
It's dark.
It
is the brightness. Where's the brightness?
Yeah, I don't
How
know.
Do I do this on the brightness? Where's this thing? Is there a thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you are. You keep playing with that.
Yeah.
You get that dialed in because I've got the next story in our apps section. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. I am so excited because the wow. Google Drive app finally, this like stoked me to no end. I'm probably one of very few people that it did. But when I saw this, I was practically jumping up and down. I've been wanting this for years. They finally updated their Google Drive app to bring native spreadsheet editing. The only reason this matters so much to me is because here at Twit, we live our lives for the shows that we do inside of Google Docs spreadsheets. Being able to edit from a mobile device has always been such a pain in the beep. Yep. And now it's so much better. They got it right. I can show it off real quick here just to kind of give you.
You're not the only person that was excited. I might have actually jumped for joy.
Okay.
It's a game changer. It's totally a game changer.
It just makes it usable, yeah. whereas before it absolutely wasn't. So
it was very teasing before. It was like, here's your doc. You can't really edit it.
Oh,
but
totally.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy, although I can't type, obviously. But boom, there we go. Updated. Done. And if I wish I could go back in time. No, actually, I don't wish that I could go back in time and show you the way it was before, because if I did that, I'd then want to jump off a cliff because it sucked so bad. So I'm very happy. Google Drive app is updated. If you haven't got the update yet, definitely get it. They also added home screen shortcuts as well as copy to clipboard, something that I guess was not part of the Google Docs experience, copying text to a clipboard. That's in your share menu. But ultimately, it's just the spreadsheet editing that makes me sing, obviously. All right back to the movie check-in.
Look at that.
Yeah, that looks pretty good. That
translates so well over internet. Whoa.
And it's Gossip Girl. I mean,
even better. But this isn't even at 1080. This is 720.
This is 720,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and this is like
it's sharp. I mean, it's really sharp. I mean, that's a great display.
Like, and it's hard because you can't really see it on the screen. It just looks like TV. But here, looking at crisp, this looks like I almost want to compare it to my phone because this is like I'm totally.
Is it almost like you're there?
It's almost like I'm there.
It's almost like a window to another world.
It's almost like I'm in bed with Serena. It's amazing. All right.
You definitely need to get that phone if that's what it's like.
Yeah. See, I miss Eileen. This is when I miss Eileen. She would be at my back for watching Gossip Girl.
Sorry, I'll just have to get into that show.
So another little app news real quickly. You might have noticed that the Facebook Messenger for Android app updated, and in addition to turning on all my turned off notifications back on, it also had an interesting thing where now you can sign up for it with just a phone number. So whereas previously it was for Facebook users only, now non-Facebook users can sign up and use Messenger with just their phone number. So very interesting. Also, I thought it was interesting, and this isn't on the rundown, but I saw some rumors this morning that Facebook is courting WhatsApp.
Yeah, I heard about that as well.
So Facebook looks like they're focusing in on messaging and cross-platform messaging and that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, it wasn't... I mean, we talked about this on TNT. Obviously, the bigger story here isn't necessarily just the app for Android, but rather the greater thing around what Facebook is trying to do here, you know, bring in more people that, you know, don't necessarily have to be tied to a Facebook account to use their services. And I guess that's valuable. I never use Facebook Messenger, period. Ever.
Neither do I. I don't like that. I turn the chat. Here, you do that.
Yeah.
I turn the chat off on Facebook. I don't use Facebook Inbox. I mean, I feel bad for anyone who messages me on Inbox on Facebook.
Because they don't get a reply.
Yeah. I wish I had auto reply. If I had an auto reply on that, that'd be sad. I'd be like, dude, email me. But I'm old. But maybe the kids use it. But I think it's interesting that how many people will get a phone and see Messenger and then sign up because their friends are on or whatever, and then that brings them one step closer to getting into Facebook. I mean, everything, all these are just user grabs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so. Absolutely. Hooks, as they say.
Exactly.
All right, cool. Well, Jason Applebaum, I'm very excited to hear what you have to say about this game. I guess it's what do you want to call this kind of game?
I would call it the Google exercise tool.
Is it an exercise tool to get you off your couch and running around chasing after nothing?
It's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely. What we're talking about is Ingress. So in Google, so at the beginning of, well, I guess let's go all the way back. So at Comic-Con this year, there was a man wandering around giving out posters and talking about visions and things that he had. And that was the start of Google's ARG, or augmented reality game. And it's what he was talking about was the Niantic project. And I believe there was a talk where he got pulled out of it. And anyway, so people have been chasing down these clues in and putting together the pieces. And on the 19th of November, Ingress was launched. Somebody's going to fact check that date. So Ingress is an app that allows you to sort of play along with the ARG. And what you see on Jason's screen is, so you have XM, which is all those little blue dots that Jason's nowhere near. You have the radius, which is... Jason, just get up and go walk around.
easy, piece of cake. Well,
there you go. XM's going to sort of come to you in a second. Well, nope, you're not close enough. Anyway, not the point. So you collect energy, and there's a bar at the top there that sort of allows you to absorb energy. But you have to walk around. That's why I said it was the exercise tool, because you really have to walk around. And I don't mean, like, walk across your house. Like, so you've got a 40 or 50 meter range. But these portals are, like, blocks and blocks away. So I've been playing this game, and I mean... I probably have walked 10, 15 miles in a day playing this game, because you have to walk around the city. Like, you have to walk around the whole of the city, because what you'll end up with is you'll have a portal that you have to take. So the idea is you walk to these portals and you capture them, and there are two teams. There's the Enlightened and the Resistance, and you connect the portals together to control people, essentially, or theoretically control people, or mind units, as it's called. Yeah, it's really long and confusing to explain, so I probably sound like a crazy person mumbling here. But the whole objective of the game is to capture portals and link portals together. But you have to walk around, and you have to do a lot of walking, because these portals are on landmarks. So firehouses, libraries, public art.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see that kind of like augmented reality. I mean, it reminds me a lot of the game that what's his name, that Dr. Tiki, that Jeff McPherson did. I think it was iOS. It wasn't Android, but it was called Code Runner or something like that.
Where
it used GPS and Google Maps data, and you walked around. When you got to a location, they would feed you audio. It was like all secret agent spy stuff, and they're like, no. And it was also using a little bit of geocaching, I think. And it's like, now look under the mailbox, and you could see that and this sort of thing. So this idea of merging the real world with a game world is very, very interesting.
So Jason, should I join the Enlightened, or should I join the Resistance?
Viva la Resistance!
The Resistance, really? Not the Enlightened? It looks all green, and like I should go with that one.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. So the Enlightened is... I can explain both. So the Resistance is fighting the Enlightened, and the Enlightened is sort of just carrying on with their merry way, because the Enlightened are sort of the government agency, if you will, and the Resistance are people trying to fight the government agency.
I'm joining the Resistance.
Yay.
What's the saying?
I think that's what I joined too. I didn't know.
Anyway, it's. I mean, you get the whole thing there. Then you'll probably go through the tutorial. So that right there is a tutorial. There's two portals that you can see on his screen. Yeah, like I said, explaining this is sort of hard. If you pull up the website, ingress.com/intel. XM
reserves. Oh, okay.
Chad's going to take off.
Yeah, I'll do that. Here, one second.
Yeah. No, wait a minute. We need you, Chad.
Just keep it on the gym shot. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
So ingress.com/intel.
Yeah, if you pull up Intel, you have to log in. Hopefully you're going to want to hide that.
Yeah. Oops.
It's all right.
Yeah, no. I think I was saying in pre-show, I've had, you know, I got my invite for this a little over a week ago. And I've installed it, and I've opened it up a little bit more than that, probably like a week and a half. And I've opened it up a number of times, meaning to do something with it. And it's kind of depressed me because it's made me realize just how little I actually leave work or home. And like the amount of time that I have to just go out and like walk and, you know, until I find these dots
there.
On a map.
Wow.
I don't have that time.
Yeah, those. When I said walk 15 miles, I really wasn't kidding. So these portals.
Wait, I love that nobody's in the sunset.
Yeah, that's just it. If you go all the way up to Petaluma, the problem with Ingress, not the problem, but there is a problem with Ingress and leveling up.
There's
if
none.
You live in Petaluma, yeah, there should be a portal. Give it a second to load. The servers are kind of being hammered. There's a lot.
It does say loading data over in the corner. You're right.
Yeah. So give it a second, and it'll load some portals in Petaluma. I'm sure there are.
Can you drive, Jason? Does it have to be walking?
I mean, you can drive, but the problem with driving is you'll drive, and then you'll spend 5 minutes at a portal, and then you have to go drive to another one. It's quicker if you walk.
There's a few portals.
Yeah, those are the portals. I mean, and the thing is, with we have five portals there, and there are good ways apart.
Yeah.
Interesting. So those four are connected and put a net over that area?
Huh?
So those four portals have connected and basically put a net over that area for that.
Correct.
For that
and
faction.
That's what I was talking about. So what you do is you capture the portals, and then once they're captured, you link them together, and the strength of a portal determines how far the link can be. And that blue area in there is what sort of captures the mind units. I know that sounds crazy, but it's essentially just capturing an area, and they're fighting over area. The Enlightened and the Resistance are fighting over area.
Are you sure this is no connection to Scientology?
I don't think it does.
and once you find out, it's too late.
If there's a stress test involved, I'm walking away. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, they're going to hook you up to the EM meters.
It does have to do with midichlorians, though, so...
Oh, what are midichlorians?
All right, well, you know, I would love to, like, totally pitch in and truly, you know, kind of figure this game out. I'm already feeling overwhelmed with things that I have to do and learn on it. I'm probably never going to play it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not that overwhelming. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah,
the biggest problem I had was that you had to have it open on your... thing. And so you couldn't, were you sure? Because I locked my phone and then I walked and it didn't pick up any XM.
You're not going to pick up XM when you walk. You have to have it open when you walk to collect XM. But however, collecting XM is the easy part. What you have a problem with is getting up to portals and seeing when you're a range of portals. What they have done inside of the Field Trip app is add an entry called Ingress. So you can identify when there's an Enlightened and Resistance portal. You can check the little boxes in Field Trip. And then I'm trying to pull a Field Trip. When you inside a Field Trip. So when you walk by and you have Explorer mode turned on Field Trip,
it will
alert portal. You.
Yeah. So when you get to a portal, do you have to do anything? Or is it just the fact that you're there? What do you have to do?
You have to hack the portal. And that's a button. And it hacks the portal.
On your phone.
Yeah, on your phone.
Right.
And the whole point is you could theoretically be battling somebody right then and there by recharge. So the person can attack a portal. And so let's say you go up to an enemy portal. You're at the enemy portal. You can fight that portal with items. And if there's somebody there at the time, it actually notifies you. The game will notify you that your portal is under attack and give you an opportunity to defend it. And the opportunity is you have to get out of your chair, go to the portal, and recharge it as they're attacking it. So the idea is, so there's a portal screen right there. So you've got eight little bars. Those are all at half strength. I think they're half. Anyway, not the point. You've got Hack, Link, Recharge. So you can recharge your own portal, and you can recharge anyone's portal. So anyone that's on your team, you can recharge their portal. And that's kind of how it works. And the idea is to capture portals from enemies and break down those nets. Because if you're, let's say there's a, all of the links go to one point. If you take out that one point, you're going to shut down all the links in that area.
All of a sudden, I'm having like major flashbacks to the Minecraft conversation.
I was going to say this is like a whole world, a lot of information at once, and I'm really stressed out now. Well, I was trying to condense it down, and I think I condensed it a little too far.
No, I totally understand it. It's just I'm freaked out, and I kind of want
to
do it.
This is why when you said you've been playing with it a lot, I wanted to talk about it because I knew I probably would never get this far with this, but you know. It seems to be the thing that everybody is talking about on Google Plus, and you know those that have invites are talking about it and have the lingo down, and those that don't are just you know replying with, "Hey, can I get an invite?" It's like everybody wants to get into this thing to see what it's all about.
I was hanging out with someone who was doing some work for freelance work for Google, but couldn't tell me what it was, and it's this. Yeah, that's why I kind of had that moment. I'm like, "Oh, that's what he's doing." It's like,
I'll be curious to see what this becomes after it comes out of beta and everybody's able to do it. Is it a flash in the pan? Yep. Does it?
Google ARG is still continuing. It's not over. So I think it's NianticProject.com is sort of the ARG that's associated with this. Mm-hmm. Because as you go and you hack the portal, you can get items. And some of those items are like documents and things like that. They're documents.
Like real world documents or?
Kind of. I mean.
Scrolls.
Real world documents. Like they look like, you know, confidential or top secret documents that are part of the Niantic project.
I see.
Which is still not quite unveiled. Everyone thought it was going to end on the 30th of the month. However, at the end of the month, they just got a new month.
Yeah. I will give them full credit for the fact that they have done a good job with the hype machine on this, because they've got a lot of people talking about it. This is one of those situations where the limited rollout of invites, though it's enraging to people that really want to get into it, has seemed to really kind of build up anticipation. They do run the risk of kind of getting overexposed and overhyped because of that.
I actually think they're maintaining that really well, though.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why I like the sound of this, because it looks like this is a case of Google kind of leading what you can do with the device and with GPS, with showing off a cool new way that you can use the device. Between field trip and between this and the integration between the two, that's pretty cool.
All right, thank you.
That's why I asked you before we opened it. It's like, how far have you gotten? Because the rabbit hole goes pretty deep.
Obviously, I have not gone far enough. I haven't even looked at the rabbit hole as far as I'm concerned.
I just know that it exists. The vernacular is very similar to when I played WoW, and I'm not sure. Oh, like, okay. So I'm starting to get the shakes. So it's like,
to be honest, it's something that you can do and then not do, and then do it when you're around or do it when you're out. It's not
cool.
It's not something that you really have to like, you know, do every day. It's very passive, and that's why I really like the field trip aspect of it. So that when you walk by a portal and you happen to have a minute, you can stop and do it.
Yeah, totally.
And what's great is that the idea that it gets you outside, I think, is great. I mean, that's really cool. So, good job, Google.
I mean, I walked all of San Francisco. I walked from the Fisherman's Wharf all the way down to Financial District just playing this game. Right. It was that addicting. Because you just have this feeling. It's like, well, if I can just get one more link or just one more item or just...
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. Great. I could completely see that.
Very cool.
Awesome.
All right.
Email.
Got an email. Eric writes in and says, last week you guys briefly mentioned the Play Store's move to Google Plus reviews. Nobody on the show, however, had anything bad to say about it, but I think there was one missing perspective. I'm a small-time developer. We live on reviews. Very few people download an app with no reviews or even a handful. For developers that have not yet made a name for ourselves, getting that good review count up is essential. I have a 5-star app on the market. It has 963 downloads at the time of this writing, with 3 ratings, 2 of them with reviews. That's a paltry 0.3% of the users who leave a rating. Sadly, outside of the technology enthusiast sphere, Google Plus is rarely used. Would my app have a single review on it if users were forced to have a G Plus profile? Coming from an app/website developer's perspective, throwing a sign-up form when the user didn't ask for it is a huge turnaway. Which is a valid complaint, but... Sorry. Ooh. Like, you know, like that's, it's Google's playground. Playground?
I feel like the developer should be able to choose. I feel like there should be a button is do allow anonymous reviews or disallow anonymous reviews.
True, it puts it in as a developer, but nobody would ever, I mean, I can't imagine, well, maybe, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, absolutely, I would take that box.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want somebody reviewing it anonymously just because it's not accountability isn't there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I understand that Google is potentially trying to use this to goose Google Play accounts and all that sort of thing, but how many of us are, I mean, if you're on Gmail, do you have a Google Plus profile? I mean, like, how outside of the Google can you be?
You don't have a Google Plus profile. You still have to sign up and say, allow me to be on Google Plus. Right. There's been tons of times where on my apps account, I didn't realize I was on my apps account when I went to Google Plus and goes, well, you want to start your profile? It's like, no, I already have one. Go away. And so there's a lot of users that they come to Google Plus and that's what they see. They see a sign up page. They don't see Google Plus.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I mean, I see
that is a tough one.
I completely see
that perspective, and I hadn't thought about that when we were talking about it. But yeah like you said, it's kind of Google's playground.
It's their rules.
I don't know where to go on that one. I guess that your app speaks for itself. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is also I don't know. I mean, I understand that people live on reviews and start. I don't read reviews personally. I mean, I don't read any reviews.
Look at them.
Yeah, I don't. But and every user is different, and that kind of speaks to it. But then also, I don't subscribe to the social network hatred or fear that other people do, which is, you know, like, oh, I don't want my name out there. I don't want to put anything out there. But you can set up a G+ profile and trim it down and have there be nothing there. You know, like, I don't think it's that much of a barrier.
Yeah.
I just think about my father who, when he had to sign in to an account on an iPad to download apps, he went, no, I don't want to create another account. It's like, this is the Apple account. This is the account that you need. It's like, no, I'll just stick with the base apps that's on the iPad. And it's like, what? And so I can see a bunch of people that are just like, I just don't want to create another account. I don't want to think about another password. I'm not going to review this.
Right. Yeah, especially when what is the upside to it? You left a review.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Most people would be like, you know, if they really had a problem with it, it's like, I can live without not putting a review on
right.
this.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's cool. All right. Well, without further ado, we have reached the arena. Let's jump in.
Two enter. One lives. Android Arena.
Okay, so last week we had Father Robert Balasair was on with us, and we had three apps. Yet again, this came down to today. Earlier today, App Sales was in the lead.
Saw.
Now, Wi-Fi Analyzer takes the lead with the win at 44%. App Sales a second at 42%, and Pixlr Express third at 14%.
I feel like Pixlr got a little bit of a shaft there, but do we have to go back to taking a screenshot of the arena before the show starts?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's an intentional goosing or if it's people tuning in going, "Oh, I didn't vote. I forgot."
I don't know.
I don't really know where to go with that.
No, because before the show started, like, I was here and App Sales was winning. So this is during the show.
Really?
It's really competitive.
Yeah, very competitive. Oh, it's brutal.
So. It is brutal, and that's why we do it.
Yep, it is.
Father Robert Balasair, I think you're in the chat room. Congratulations, you win again, sir.
Yes. And the guest wins.
The guest
is going to win the year, actually. Yeah.
All right, so we have three new apps.
Win.
You hope that the guest wins, right?
Yeah.
We have three new apps to feature this week. Ron, you're up first.
All right. So again, as I set out to populate my entry for the arena, I asked myself, what would Eileen do? And I channeled the spirit of Eileen. But even more so, a hotly anticipated and a hotly discussed application I decided to throw in the arena here, and it is called Falcon Pro. And this is a Twitter application that has been under development. It's been out there that people know that it's coming and finally got my hands on it. The Falcon Pro is $1.03 in the Google Play Store. If you want to go check it out. And
it's actually 99 cents right now.
I'm sorry?
It's 99 cents.
Oh, now
right
it's 99 cents. Oh. Wow, I paid $1.03 earlier.
Yeah,
today,
I know.
So they got those extra 4 cents for me.
It must be an international developer.
Yeah, yeah. And so 99 cents in the Google Play Store. And now I've been generally not a critic, but not a fan of third-party Twitter apps, as throughout the All About Android's history, Eileen has reviewed, I think, every Twitter app that's come out. Even you've taken a look at a couple of Twitter apps, Jason.
I think we featured an arena all around Twitter apps at one point,
exactly.
Too.
So. The very first episode of After Judgment over at Rev 3 that we produced was Twitter apps. I mean, like, Twitter app is like
the popular category.
It is a popular category. Now, I personally use the official Twitter app. It has everything I need. I'm used to it. I like it. So it's a uphill battle for me to take a Twitter client and say, okay, I'm going to use this. So that's my kind of spot. That said, Falcon Pro really impressed me. So opening it up, when you log into it, what you need to do is you utilize your the OAuth integration with Twitter to log in with your account, and then it immediately syncs up your account and starts downloading all the tweets. What you've got here is I've got my main timeline, so this is everyone I'm following, and this does something that the official Twitter app doesn't do that I really like, which it remembered where I last viewed.
Tweet marker.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. And picks it up. So I go through. These are all the ones I've missed while we've been doing the show. And so what you've got up here is I've got the number of tweets. It's hard to see in here, but I've got 928 tweets I've yet to read. I've got 22 at replies. I've got no direct messages. So if I want to pop to my at replies, I can go over there, and I can see all the at replies, you know, so people freaking out that I got a haircut and that sort of thing. There's Eileen. We miss you, Eileen. So, and you can click on a tweet and it will zoom in and show you the whole conversation. Tweets with media really nicely. So here we can hit this one, you know, and this brings up a picture. There's some Mets reporting, David Johnson getting interviewed. You know, it will pull in. I want to find out what video. So you can see there's a little play button. You pull in, there's Zay Frank, and there's a little video, and it will go and launch YouTube. So kind of nice and clean kind of design. What's really neat is if you swipe to the right, towards the right, it gives you this little menu, and I get to see, you know, this is my name, how many people I'm following, all my followers, and I can choose my timeline, mentions or DMs or favorites. So I can go to my favorites, and it'll pull up my favorites, and I can go back to my timeline. It'll pull up my timeline. I don't know why I didn't do that. Yeah, not stuck on favorites. There we go. Okay, cool. Yep. So, because I think it was trying to refresh. If I want to type a tweet, I just hit here in the upper right-hand corner, and I get a little window here where I can type in a new tweet. It pulls up my keyboard. I can put in a picture. I can put a picture from the gallery. I can take a picture of the camera, put in my location, and post away. If you swipe to the right, you get my lists. World trends, local trends. So if I want to see what's going on locally, I can hit that versus what's going on in the world. You know, just nice little kind of swiping movement that keeps the flow going. My one little complaint is that if you swap it to landscape, what it does is it populates your timeline right here on the left and your profile, which is okay, but I don't want to read my own tweets. Like,
yeah, like
give me
why
my
timeline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you click one of the items on the left, does it pop that over to the right?
There you go. Okay. I didn't do that. So there you go. Very clever.
Discovering new features.
Very clever.
So that's like its default is showing your profile.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
It's a little confusing.
But it was a little, as you can see, it's a little confusing. Couple of things that was missing that I would have liked. It doesn't support multi-accounts. So you can, if you only have one account, I'm somebody who manages several accounts and I need that multi-user account. So I'm not sure I'm going to switch off for it. There you can go to my profile. In the settings, admittedly, now this is just starting. This just kind of came out. They do have an interesting approach in terms of how they handle extra content. You can purchase this Falcon for Twitter donate app, which isn't another app. It's just it's a way to give them a little more money, and it unlocks the ability to tweet from the notification pane as well as wallpapers and things like that. I get the sense that there's going to be some growth around it because, for example, in the settings under display, here in display, the description is layout, themes, colors, etc. And I hit it, and all I can do is change inline media preview or change the text size. I wanted to change the theme to be a little lighter, but here I can just change the text size. So I assume that's coming. Of course, you know, here the size should be bigger, but the settings was real easy. My my default thing with any of these apps is to go in the settings and turn off all the notifications, and that was really easy to do. You can set the sync time. You can set the refresh rate to either be manual or, you know, any number of minutes. You know, pretty much has all that core Twitter functionality. But I like the swiping. I like the controls over it. And, you know, pretty impressive first out of the gate. So Falcon Pro, I think, delivered a little bit on the hype.
Yeah, and I mean, it's gotten a lot of hype. I've seen just over the weekend, you know, we got so many emails from different people to AA@twit.tv and, you know, tweets and everything. They were like, is Falcon Pro going to be on the show? Falcon Pro, yep. It's great, blah, blah, blah. And, I played around with it. I like it. It's not enough to pull me from Plume. I have to admit, you know, partially because of the multi-account support.
Yep.
But one thing I have heard, and I do know, is that the developer of this app is really engaged with it. There are people that will tell the developer, hey, it doesn't do blah, or this is kind of weird. And within, you know, a few hours, there's an update to the app, and what do you know?
Well, that kind of ties into one of the things that I like about it. And Chad, can you pull up the Google Play Store page? It's aggressive. Look at that logo. That's an angry falcon. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, and I get the sense it's an aggressive app. It's very quick to update. It's very quick to notify. It's very quick to the notifications alert you. You know, it's kind of hard to ignore it. It's not, I don't want to say it's in your face, but it's not passive. And I like that. That's something that really kind of impressed me. If it had the user accounts, I would strongly consider switching just because I like the inline media stuff. I like the way it kind of flowed. I love the tweet marking. You know, those are all things that I've lost with the official Twitter app, and I kind of find myself now questioning whether I should stick with the official Twitter app or not.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it's gotten a little stagnant. You know,
yeah.
So we'll see. So I did put it on my phone. Chad showed some of the video, so I don't need to show it on here. But the interface is pretty much the same on tablet or the phone. You know, it's very consistent and it's totally usable on the phone. I used it on the drive up here, and it was, you know, working great for me. Yeah, so Falcon Pro, if you're a Uber Twitter user, you might want to give it a shot and take a look at it.
Just realize it's made by the same developer that did Minimal Reader Pro, which was an app that I featured in episode 83 in the arena.
There you go.
So, and I really like the design on that app as well. So
yeah, I would give it a shot. I mean, it's 99 cents. Give it a shot and see what you think. But yeah, that multi-user, I mean, if the developer here watches this or whatever, it's like
that. I mean,
multi-user, it's to the point now where it's
coming. You have to imagine that it's coming. It, yeah. That's enough of a killer feature, you know, required feature in Twitter apps for it not to be there.
Yep.
So I'm sure it's coming. So that is cool. Falcon Pro.
Yep.
All right, Jason Applebaum, you have an interesting app that, you just take it.
I feel like I'm going to go on another rant again and explain things and make people's minds explode. Okay. No, my app is geocaching. So geocaching is the name of the app. It is $9.99. So it's I think I always do the expensive apps, but it's a really solid app. So the app's been around for a long time and they've made serious improvements, and it's a really solid app. So geocaching, for those who don't know, is sort of the activity of finding treasures that have been hidden through the world with GPS, and you get some GPS coordinates and a bit of a description and you're off finding it. The website is geocaching.com. It used to go to find these caches, and they've made an app. It's the official geocaching.com app. So it lists all the caches out. It can find caches near you, and it gives you several different ways to find caches. It does compass view, or it'll actually give you a map and draw a line. Compass view is a little bit more challenging, but it's an overall really solid app, and it's a lot of fun. So if you're out for, you know, a weekend in a park or something, it's a lot of fun to be able to not have to pre-plan your trip. You can just open the app up and go geocaching. It's an app I use constantly when I'm out and about, because I've been geocaching for probably 8 years now. Back when it was GPS, pen and paper, and off you go, and the app is a lot of fun. It just condenses it down. It makes it so you can just go out and do it.
Geocaching is so weird to me. I mean, I get it. I think it's really cool, but it's just like it's. I've never felt the need to try it, I guess.
You know? You should try it.
Have you ever found? I mean, you don't get to keep what you find, right?
Have I ever found a geocache? I've found hundreds.
No, no, no. But have you ever found anything interesting in the geocache that you got to keep or not?
Yes.
Like, what's really like what?
So it's attacking.
No, I'm just curious.
So the most interesting thing is actually the log. In a cache, it's the log of who's found it, when it's been found, how long the cache has been there, where they're from. So I found caches where people are from all over the world. I found items that have been all around the world as well. So there's things called bugs, and they're essentially tags. They're like dog tags that you put in a cache and you attach it to a sentimental thing. Like there was one I found probably about a year ago. It was a Hot Wheels car, and it was a Hot Wheels car from, I think, Germany. And essentially the kid wanted his car to go around the world. So the father put it in a cache in Germany, and it has a note, please take this around the world. So I think it's been like 3 or 4 years by the time I found it. I found it and moved it further. So you basically take it from the cache and you replant it. But basically his objective was to get it back to Germany. And there was a list of everywhere it's been online, and it was everywhere. I mean, the thing had been to like the North Pole.
Cool.
On an expedition. Yeah, it was really cool. And that's the kind of stuff you find. It's more of the sentimental of the story, not so much, you know, I found a dollar.
Yeah, I also did a book swap cache where you brought a book and then you would open up the cache and then you looked at all the books and then you put your book in and then took another book out.
That's cool.
And then I've also... go ahead.
No, I was going to say the golden rule of geocaching, bring something, take something.
Right. And then there was one where it was a Halloween cache. Even though it wasn't Halloween time at the time, and they had a box of rings that apparently the guy lived next to it, so he had a whole bunch of spider rings that you would go get. But then also there's like sightseeing caches. So you'll go to the first cache and then it tells you a history on where you're at and it says here's the coordinates for the next cache. And that's not written in the description. You'd now plug it in and then go to the next place. And so, like, we ended up, like, walking through a golf course and then to a big, you know, a big statue. Multi-point. And then, yeah, so it's a multi-point cache.
I'm such a jerk. When you're talking about that book cache, the response that popped in my head is, like, you know, there's a building where that's all they do at the library.
Right.
It's like, you don't need to go find it. It's just they want you to come in.
It sounds
but that's
like,
not the fun. The fun is, you know, right. Seeing what's there. It's an adventure. Yeah.
Right, it's not the
right. It's
not necessarily
the destination.
Yeah.
Blue highways, I guess.
Do you want to have fun for a night with your friends? You know, and $10 for an app that's going to make it easy.
Yeah,
awesome. You know,
cool. No, I get it. I don't get me wrong. I get it. Yeah, so that's cool. All right.
I think it's pretty sweet.
It's not another Twitter client.
Oh,
Jason comes out punching.
Burn.
Wow.
Serena's sick getting burn. Tough. Ooh, it's getting hot in here. I do like that both your arena pick and the other app that you talked about have so much to do with kind of location and using your device and kind of the GPS that's built into it in ways that I don't use my device like that.
Yep.
And I've always been very curious about that, but I just never make the time for it. It sounds like you do make the time for it. And like we were saying, it's the journey. It's not necessarily what you get at the other end, but it's kind of, it's the catalyst to kind of get you out there into an interesting experience.
Yeah. It's hard to find time to do it because everyone's so busy nowadays, but I just do the one on the weekends. It's, you know, when I'm there, when I'm around, when I'm traveling, downtime.
Cool. All right, so that is geocaching, all one word. The app is $9.99. It's in the Play Store. Geocaching, all one word. I'm going to go completely different, but we're all over the map on this arena. And I was kind of stoked when I saw this come up. And I realized that it was in the Play Store yesterday, downloaded it. And so I haven't like spent a whole lot of time playing it other than this afternoon. Oh, my audio is not up. It's a game by Sega called Jet Set Radio. If you ever had the Dreamcast, I never had a Dreamcast, but I had a friend that had the Dreamcast, and he had Jet Set Radio on it.
I remember this.
And it's just a good kind of console quality arcade game. by the Sega camp, which basically means quality. So I'll go ahead and load up the game that I was playing earlier, which is really nothing more than just me having gotten already through the tutorials. But when you get past the fact that the game revolves around someone on rollerblades, it's actually really cool. No offense, although I realize that came out totally wrong. Anyways, you are a guy or a girl. It depends on which character you select. See, I can select whoever I want. And you essentially have these different maps that you go riding around in your rollerblades. You collect spray cans along the way. And then you have the opportunity to kind of, to tag up the place, tag up cars, tag up the walls. Each time you're tagging, sometimes it's as easy as just pressing the spray can and dropping a tag. Other times, you actually have to kind of do kind of a key combination to do the more complex things. It's going to be really hard for me to do this in talk, so I'll just kind of show you just very briefly. There's these different buttons around here. One makes you go fast. The other makes you jump. Got the spray can over here. If I've collected spray cans, I can go ahead and find an arrow. Let's see here. Playing sideways is not my strong suit. So I'll go ahead and go real fast over here. Someone's already spraying it up. And then I'll go ahead and use my spray can. This is like the action that I need to do. Right down, then up, and finish. Boom! I've just sprayed the bus. After I do a number of these, then the police kind of come out and they start chasing you. You also have a time that's kind of ticking down. So you have, you have to kind of speed through this. You can do little rail slides. You can jump off the rail onto other rails or tag onto the back of cars. It's just kind of a fun arcade-style game, and they did a really good job getting this set for Android. It just feels it feels just like the original. My only complaint with this, and it is with any touchscreen game like this, is that it's really... I like the newfangled touchscreen games where the joystick drops wherever your thumb happens to hit at that particular moment. Dead Trigger does this, where the joystick isn't in a fixed location down here. It pretty much drops wherever you happen to drop your thumb. That's really intuitive. This, because it's a touch screen, the big screen is so vast and expansive that on something that's kind of this, that moves at the speed of this game at times, you can not realize after a while that you're totally off of the joystick and becomes kind of a bummer.
There's some
sick beats. Sick beats and...
Kitchen blades.
I don't know. It has a really cool kind of almost at times psychedelic style to it. The game just moves very, very smoothly. And actually, I've been playing it on the Droid HTC, so everything just looks super crisp and clear. And it's even more enjoyable because of that. But it has a great soundtrack. It's just a lot of fun. And it's a good throwback for anybody who may have played it on the Dreamcast. And even if you haven't, it's just a great quality game. As some of the commenters in the Play Store are saying on this, it's good to support high quality, top-notch games on the Android platform and encourage more of them. I would love to see Sega release even more. I know that they have Crazy Taxi coming out sometime soon.
Really?
And I love that game.
I love Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, totally.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So Sega is doing some really cool stuff with the platform.
That's very cool.
Even though it's not their platform, they're still releasing games for it, and it's really hard
Crazy
for me
Taxi
to not buy them.
Crazy Taxi is so much fun. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy the heck out of that.
Totally. Well, the good news is you won't have to buy the heck out of it. You just buy it once.
Right, true. Yeah, just buy it once. Yeah, there you go. I loved Crazy Taxi. Crazy Taxi was a blast.
So that's Jet Set Radio. It's $4.99. Little pricier, but I think you're paying for the total console quality gameplay and graphics here, and I guarantee you'll have a lot of fun with it once you get used to the controls. Again, it's Jet Set Radio by Sega. So that's it. This arena is jam-packed. We have Falcon Pro, we have geocaching, and we have Jet Set Radio. This week's poll can be found at AAAPoll.com/88, AAAPoll.com/88. Let us know which is your favorite this week. And I'm curious to see early reports, because at this point, I think people just kind of know what our URL is for these things.
I used to be all tricky with it. And,
I know. Yeah, I don't know why. Because I wanted to keep people from voting on it until we made the announcement. Now it's kind of like, well, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. People are going to find apps cool or not, no matter what. So there we go. Vote on those. You have all week, and we'll check in on the winner next week. Speaking of next week... Michael Wolfson. You may remember him. He was the winner of the App Made Fan.
The App Made Fan?
Fan Made App contest with Droid of the Day. He's also the author of an upcoming book. It's not out yet. It'll be out sometime early next year called Android Developer Tools. And he's going to actually come on the show next week and join us just for the show.
Cool.
Through the end of the year, we're just kind of pulling in some of our best guests. So that'll be Michael Wolfson next week. And speaking of best guests, Jason Applebaum, thank you so much for joining us. It's always fun to have you on the show.
Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. What would you like to plug? This is your opportunity to go plug crazy.
I'm just going to plug my blog. So my blog right now is nothing, but I just finished coding up my new blog with my first new project on there. I've got my Raspberry Pi Android enabled barbecue smoker.
But wait a minute, I missed the last part of that.
It's a smoker, meat smoker, like physical, not you know.
Interesting.
Yes. Anyway, it's a what?
No, I didn't expect a barbecue smoker at the end of that sentence.
I heard it all, and I'm intrigued.
No, yeah. I'm in the process of building a do-it-yourself barbecue control.
All right,
it's going to have an Android app and everything. So go over to the blog, check it out. That's coming up in the next few weeks.
That's awesome,
Mr. Applebaum. I like what you've got cooking. I subscribe to this. Count me in.
Yeah, barbecue's amazing.
Barbecue smokers are amazing too. If you like my babbling, you can go to about.me/RonXO where you can find links to my Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and all that stuff, and you can hear more and go check out ifanboy.com if you're into comic books, because that's where I babble as well too during the day.
Excellent. And Chad?
I am you can find me at omgchad.com, or I do a little Minecraft podcast called OMG Craft. You can check it out at omgcraft.com. I might get last week's episode posted eventually.
Do you ever have people like that follow your show that play Minecraft specifically on the Android Pocket Edition?
Unfortunately, the Android Pocket Edition is way behind the PC version. A lot of parents like to buy their kids the Pocket Edition because they go, oh, well, we don't want you playing on the computer. We'll get you the mobile edition.
Right.
So there is a reposter in chat room says Minecraft Pocket Edition sucks. And well, there's a lot of people that have that same feeling that it's just not that great.
It's just not up to par.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
Unfortunately.
All right. We'll follow Chad there.
I liked it.
What's that?
I said I liked it.
But have you played actual Minecraft?
No.
Yeah, see, that's you don't know what you're missing.
I'm afraid I would never get anything done.
Let's avoid the Minecraft discussion.
Right.
Speaking
of rabbit holes, this is another one.
That one.
All right, so you can find me at about.me/Jason Howell or on Twitter. I am at Jason Howell there as well. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. You can leave us a voicemail, as always, at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always send us an email or a video mail, attach a link into an email, send that to us at aaa@twit.tv. We'd love that. We'd play it on the show. You can find us, the show, on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA, as well as past episodes. Find those there, iTunes, YouTube. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. I saw an email just a little bit ago. Eileen was watching.
Well, she was on
Twitter.
I saw it, yeah.
She said she's now a watcher. So hope she'll join us, and you'll join us next week for another episode of All About Android. Bye.